Topic I want to do today is actually reminiscent. It's the exact same topic as last week, using hot water on Shabbos from an apartment building. And I usually really do try to pick new topics. I know people don't like revisiting old things; they want to hear new things. I really do try keeping to that, but I just got this week so many questions about the topic, and I felt also that last week I was a bit rushed. There was a lot to cover in the topic, and I felt like I didn't cover the topic as well as I wanted to. So I want to do this topic again and do it a little bit. I want to focus. I'm not going to repeat everything we did last week. I want to focus on the things that we kind of ran through, and more specifically, I also want to focus on some of the arguments, more very specific claims that people have made to permit using hot water. And I want to just talk about it, either debunk them or support them, and just explore those different issues as the topic comes up, as well as some other side issues that relate to hot water that I wasn't able to cover last week. As always, feel free to ask any questions. I'm always open, especially during this year. That's really the purpose of repeating it, the same topic, is really to get at all those questions. So again, just to repeat, so I'm going to share my screen again. Just to repeat again the main point from last week, which was, if you remember, basic hot water system, we talked about how it works. Basically, when you open the hot water tap, the pressure that which pushes the hot water in also causes simultaneously cold water from the city water supply to enter into the hot water tank. That cold water that enters is immediately cooked by the presence of the hot water already in the tank, and therefore, according to 90% of modern poskim, modern halachic deciders, they think that that would be problematic. It's the malacha of bishul, of cooking on Shabbos, one of the 39 malachot, one of the 39 prohibitions, and therefore would be forbidden to ever use hot water on Shabbos. You would not be allowed to open the hot water tap. We talked about there may be a second issue potentially that if you use enough hot water, then not only will cold water enter the tank and be cooked by the hot presence of the other hot water in the tank, but also the flame or whatever heating unit is being used to heat up the tank will turn on, and you will be chayav also for causing the heating unit to turn on. The third issue I mentioned was that if your hot water that comes out of the faucet is really hot, like you like washing dishes with really boiling hot water, so then there could be a third issue that the hot water that you're using is being cooled down a little bit, even if you're not turning on the cold water faucet at all, you're only using the hot water. But even, especially if you are using the hot water, if the hot water is boiling, so what you're doing is you are cooking some cold water, because some cold water is entering into the faucet at the same time and is cooling down the hot water, because in the tank it's about 140 degrees or so, and when it comes out, even if you press it out the highest, by New York state law it can't be that hot. People will sue and it'll get burnt. So by New York state law it's probably closer to 115 or something, and it's being cooled down a bit, but by cooling it down the cold water is being heated, being cooked, and therefore you'd be chayav for bishul. And so according to all poskim, in terms of issue number three, you really have no solution. You wouldn't be able to use boiling hot water to the dishes. You would be able to use hot water, potentially, we'll talk about hot water, which is not boiling hot. It's water which is hot, not that hot that you wouldn't recoil your hand, but it's still pretty hot. Still, not maybe the best hot water in terms of temperature for washing dishes, but certainly doable. However, as I mentioned, you have the other two issues, the first two issues you have to deal with, which are the primary issues. And as I mentioned, I'm not going to repeat all the things we talked about last week, but for the most part, most poskim think that really that problem of cooking the water is a really big issue and cannot be avoided, and therefore it's going to be prohibited to ever use hot water on Shabbos. You cannot use open the faucet on Shabbos. That's kind of the way that most poskim believe it. It said like 90%. We quoted Shmir Shabbos Gachata from Zalman Auerbach. I quoted from Rav Mordechai Willig, and I really could quote, I've heard from Rav Moshe Feinstein, really a whole host of positions that really believe that there is a prohibition, and there would be a problem to use the hot water at all. I just inserted in the chat, if you want to see the sources yourself, you can see them yourself as well. What I'd like to focus on, though, is, as I mentioned, the 90% I think is problematic. I want to focus now on the rest of the shiur, as I'm last week, potentially exploring what might be ground to permit it. Despite the fact that 90% do prohibit, there are some that do permit it. And as I said, I'm really not here to provide psak. That's not really my goal. I'm not personally, in this shiur context, giving a personal psak. If you want to ask me after the shiur, feel free to do so. But I want to do is give a balanced approach. And to give a balanced approach, will be different depending on where you are. If I was giving a shear in Lakewood, then, you know, not they're almost definitely everyone would be holding by the 90% of post. I mean, I would just end it off like it's prohibited to use hot water on Shabbos, end the shear, have a great night, I'll see you again next week. That'd be the end of it. If I was giving a shear in Israel, so I'd also say 90% say it's prohibited. And then I wouldn't say it's permitted, but in fact, what most happening now in Israel is that there are a lot of new technology that there's different, you know, especially in the apartment buildings or different homes that people have, there's new technology for the hot water heaters that can be used, and there are certain solutions you can use to avoid some of these issues. And we would explore some of those solutions. As a matter of fact, in America, even if you live in a suburban home, most of those solutions are not really available to us. And especially if you live in an apartment building where you really don't, for the most part, have access to your hot water tank. It's usually under lock and key. Only the super or, you know, whatever the management company of the building has access to it. You really have no ability to fix that type of issue. And so in our community here at Lincoln Square, to give a really balanced approach, I have to be aware that not only, you know, of the 90% of posting we think is prohibited, but there are a number of people who have permitted it, particularly at Lincoln Square. And so to do a balanced approach, I really want to give credence to those positions, explore what's their basis for, and really explore the issue as a whole, giving you the full background. At the end of the day, you can decide amongst yourself and, you know, your local Orthodox rabbi, your posek, whoever it may be, what exactly you would like to do for yourself. Great. So in order to explore this issue, yes, Micah. Yeah, that's kind of dependent on the particular system. It's not really applicable for most apartment buildings, especially since it would have to be. It's not really relevant for most buildings. That's the truth. And yeah, even if it were relevant, it's not really an issue, as far as I know. Yeah, but interesting question. Okay, so let's talk about the issues. There are three main halakhic issues I want to talk about. There are issues of grema, of psik resha, and suffix psik resha. The first issue, grema, we talked about last week, and I rushed through it because the whole shiur really I was rushing. I'm not going to go through it again, even the part that I rushed, because the truth is grema is just, it's very complicated. I'll just give you the very bare bones background, which is the concept of grema. What it means is it's some type of causative effect. It means that the action that's attributed to you is not really your action, but it's actually an effect of what you did. You are not the one who did this particular action. Instead, it happened due or consequence to your action, and therefore it's not attributed to you directly. So, for instance, think of a good grum example. If I turn on the water, and due to the water flowing, it then ends up, cooling on the sidewalk, right? I wash my hands on the sidewalk. Right, and I wash my hands, you know, because I'm on the sidewalk of a picnic, and the water then flows from the concrete, right, the sidewalk, and it flows from the concrete down to grass, and the grass thereby is watered, and potentially be a problem which is called zorea of planting or promoting plant growth on Shabbos. And so in that type of situation, I'm not giving a psak in terms of whether it be prohibited or permitted, but in general, that type of action would be considered grumba, because I didn't directly pour water onto the grass. Instead, what I did was I poured water onto the concrete, and from there, because of gravity, it rolled from the concrete to the grass. And so my action, in terms of my responsibility, is defined as grema. It's more causative. And grema is not permitted, you know, entirely on Shabbos, but it's a lower level prohibition. And in addition to other things, it might be cause to permit a certain action on Shabbos. And so when it comes to our issue of using hot water from a faucet on Shabbos, one of the major questions is the cold water that enters into the intake valve back here, right? When you turn on the hot water, right, cold water rushes in. Is that defined to be your action, or is it defined to be a causative action, a type of grumma, something which is not directly your, but an effect of your action? And so I mentioned that there's a few different opinions on it. Most posts can think it really is defined as your maisa, as your action. But as I said, there's good reasons to suggest it's not your action. In fact, it may be only grumma, it's only a delayed effect of your action. It's a big debate. That's kind of issue number one. Is it grumma or is it your action? Is it your actual maisa? That's a debate within the achronim, and that's going to make a big difference in terms of how we view this particular action, whether it's permitted to use hot water on Shabbos. Any questions so far? I know I'm not really explaining the issue in depth, but that's kind of the basic background of grema and its applicability in this particular issue. Okay, No other questions. Let's move on to the next issue. The next halachic issue that I want to explore, and I didn't have this on the Mekorot last week, but I want to really go into it this week, is this concept called psik resha. Now, what is a psik resha? So to best understand a psik resha, let's look at source number 14. It's on page number 3, bottom of page 3, that really goes through and explains some of the basics of psik resha. The Gemara says as follows, Tanu Rabbanan, Hatolish Olshin Vamizari Zradin, if you do certain actions. So the Gemara goes in to explain, right, there are 39 melachot, and you want to know how much do I have to do of a given melacha, of a given act of work, for me to have violated the prohibition of doing work on Shabbos. And so the Gemara gives a shir, what's called an amount, right? Just as, you know, for positive mitzvah, I have to know how much I have to do, how much matzah I have to eat in order to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. So too, I need to know how much do I need to do of a certain prohibition to have violated the prohibition. So the Gemara says as follows. When it comes to Hatolish Eitzim, when it comes to someone who wants to cut weeds, or Mizari Zradim, Im Lachila Kegrogeret, if the point of your cutting the weeds is in order to eat them, so then, if you're doing the melacha of kotzer, you're doing the melacha of harvesting, because you're trying to cut them for the purpose of consumption. And so, therefore, the shear is a grogeret, which is the size of a fig bulk, it's a certain size, a fig. And if it's for lebehema, kimale akdi, and if it's for an animal, then it's a little bit bigger. Im lehesek, if it's for burning, it's a little bit smaller. It's like the basho beit hakala, it's the amount of wood or amount of firewood required to cook an egg. Im liafot et akarka kol shehem. If it's in order, though, to make the ground more beautiful, right? You're removing the weeds, not because you want to use the weeds in a constructive purpose, but because you actually want to improve your garden, right? Weeds are, you know, for the most part, bad for grass, for gardens, for whatever you're trying to grow. So then kol shein, even the smallest amount, you're chayav. So the Gemara asked the following question then. Atu kulu lo liyafot the karkaninu? Wait, the Gemara asked, I don't understand. It may be true that even if I'm trying to cut off weeds in order to feed them to my animal or to eat them, that might be one of the reasons I'm cutting it. But at the end of the day, regardless of my actual motivations, by removing the weeds, the ground looks nicer, the grass looks better. And so regardless of what my actual motivations are, I should be liable for even the smallest shear, for even the smallest amount, because by doing even the smallest amount of uprooting weeds, I have made my grass look nicer, and therefore should be liable for the malacha of zareah, of planting, which isn't just the malacha of actual planting, but really anything that makes, improves, or promotes plant growth. So I should be high for even the smallest amount. So the Gemara gives two answers. Answer number one, Rabbi Yosef, Amri Tavayu, Be'agam Shani, we're talking about a case where you're in, what's the English translation here, a swampland. Some type of place which is there's no purpose, you're not promoting plant growth here, right? There's no like nothing else is growing in this swamp. That's answer number one. Answer number two, which is more to our purpose, Abaye Amar Afilu Tema Besada Delav Agam, even if it's a field that actually has, you know, other plants, it's not a swamp, Kigon Delom Kamikaven. But what you're doing here is you're not mechavein, you're not actually intending to promote plant growth. You're removing the weeds only in order to, feed your animal with them, but not because you want to improve or the garden itself. And therefore, you'd only be liable for the larger amount, for the gogeret, for the fig amount, or for the amount required for feeding an animal, but not for the smaller amount, which is for improving the ground. The Gemara asks, "V'ha bai v'rava damer tivai amoder v'shimam b'stik reisha v'lo yamut." So the Gemara asks, "Wait." So I forgot to explain something significant, which is that in general, just as a general background, the reason that Rabbi's answer even makes sense to begin with is because when it comes to most things in the Torah, and especially when it comes to Shabbos, there's a general rule that if I have davar she'eino mitkaven, something that I do not intend to happen, then I'm not chayav. In order for Shabbos, for me to do a malacha, one of the 39 malachot, I have to intend to do the malacha. It can't just happen on its own without my intention. I have to be thinking about it actively. I have to do what's called melechet machshevet. I have to actively want this to happen, this result to happen, right? Very much thought-based, very much intentionality is critical in these melechot. And so the Abaye's first argument is, oh, in this case, you're not intending for the melechet to happen. You don't want to improve the grass. So the Gemara says, Habaye v'rava damar tervayu, but Abaye, this same person, Abaye, believed that Moshe Rabbi Shimon b'sikrei shev lo yamut. that even though there is a principle that I said that davarshein mikaven, if something you're not intending, then in general on Shabbos you are patur, you are not liable for that malacha. However, in a case what's called a psik risha, if something is going to happen every single time, 100% of the case, right, every time that I uproot weeds, no matter what, the garden is improved, then Rabbi Shimon, even his position that generally permits such a malacha, would prohibit. And I quoted here, source 15, it's the next page, the Rambam that really explains this thing a little bit more clearly, more explicitly. He says, Asa masa v'nasi b'glala malacha shevada taseh b'shvil oto masa, afa pishalonim kavin la chayav. If you do a malacha, even though you're not thinking, you're not intending for that action to happen, if it's going to happen 100% of the time, because it's impossible for that malacha, for that cause, that effect not to happen, then you are going to be chayav. And he gives the example, this is where the source for the word sikresha comes from. What if you, for instance, you have a child in front of you and you want to play with the child, you want to get the child a toy, so what do? You take a chicken and you cut off its head. And you're cutting off the head of the chicken, not because you want to kill the chicken, but because you want to play with the kid and be able to play with the head. And the only reason you're cutting off the head is for, you know, as a ball, as a plaything for the kid. And nonetheless, because every single time, even though your goal, your intended purpose here is not to kill the chicken, however, because every time I cut off a chicken's head, the chicken will obviously die, right? That's the basic laws of nature. If you cut off something's head, the thing will die. So, therefore, I am going to have violated the prohibition, in this case, of shochet, of killing an animal, and therefore be liable. Despite the fact that I did not have intention to do so, because it's a big ratio, because it's going to happen every single time, no matter what, I am liable. Why am I liable for something just because it happens every single time, even though I did not intend for it? So there are a few different explanations. The very basic explanation, which I'm not going into all the different details, but the basic explanation for why you're chayav, even though you're not intending it, is because the halacha views that any time something becomes so automatic that the action, the resulting action, is going to happen every single time, then when you do action A, because action B is inevitably going to follow, it's considered that you were thinking about action B also. Even though you'll say, oh, I wasn't really thinking about action B, I wasn't thinking about the result, about, you know, the chicken dying, but because cutting off a chicken's head is inevitably tied to the chicken dying, it's considered as if you really were thinking about the chicken dying and violating the prohibition of shochet. And likewise, the Gemara, therefore, here in source 14, Gemara in Sabbath, ask the question, it's true that when it comes to cutting the grass, when I removed the weeds, I did not intend to make the garden look nicer. Nonetheless, it was going to happen every single time. Anytime I take out weeds, the garden looks nicer as a result, and therefore it should be prohibited. So the Gemara says as follows, Lot Zricha de Ke'avi Be'ara de Chavre. The Gemara says, no, in this case, it's not prohibited because you are doing it, you're removing the weeds in your friend's garden. Why are you not obligated for taking out the weeds in your friend's garden? So actually, there is a gzela question that's like in the background here. In theory, it'd be stealing for me to take the weeds out of my friend's garden, but we're going to avoid the gzela issue, the stealing question. But in terms of the Hilchot Shabbos question, why is it that taking out the weeds out of my friend's field is not considered to be a malacha? So there's two basic answers given in the Rishon. The main one, and this is the one we're really going to focus on for now, is quoted by the Aruch. Tosfos 1:4:16 quotes this position of the Aruch. Who is the Aruch? The Aruch is Rabbi Natan. He was someone who lived in the 11th century, who lived in Italy, and he wrote a dictionary. And in this dictionary, he defined a lot of Talmudic terms. And as part of his dictionary, sometimes instead of just defining solely, you know, giving a dictionary simple definition, he also kind of expounded upon the topic as a whole and kind of gave his own notes. And so when the Aruch wrote this concept of sikresha, when he talked about this concept of, you know, inevitable consequences of your action on Shabbos, so the Aruch wrote as follows, Erech sever, the psikresha lo nichalei, kegon dekeavid ba'ar lechavre, kegon ve'achar sheinu o'avo. So what the Aruch explained is the reason that you're permitted to take out the weeds in a field of your friend is because it's defined as a psik resha delo nichale. A psik resha where the causative effect does not matter to you. It's something that doesn't benefit you, or it doesn't matter to you. It doesn't affect you in any way. And because, think about it, in your field, right, for me, if it was my garden, of course, if I were to take out the weeds, that would be very beneficial to me. But when I take out the weeds out of my friend's garden or someone else's garden, so that has no impact on me. I could care less about my friend's garden. So the Aruch makes the point that this is specifically a friend, obviously, you're not very close to. Obviously, it's a very close friend, and I want to improve my friend's life. I want to make his garden look nicer. But the average person, let's say it's not your friend, let's say it's even easier. Let's say I'm in the park, right? I'm in Central Park, I'm having a picnic, and I accidentally, or whatever it is, I end up tugging on some of the weeds and pull them out. So I don't care that much about Central Park. Like, I want it to look nicer in theory, but like, I don't really care about Central Park. And so even though every single time I pull out the weeds, it's going to make the park look nicer, because I could care less about how the park actually looks, it's defined as a psik resha delo nichale, an intended effect that's going to happen no matter what, every single time, that I do not care about. That does not benefit me. And according to the Aruch, such an action is permitted on Shabbos. Only something which benefits me is going to be prohibited, something which I'm not thinking about, even if it happens 100% of the time, if it doesn't benefit me, I do not care about. That is the position of the Aruch. However, if you look at the bottom of that, you continue reading at the bottom line of that Tosfot, the Eino Nira, last line, he says, in that first paragraph, the Eino Nira, Tosfot disagrees. Tosfot thinks that's not true. This case, he does not agree with the Aruch, the definition. He thinks that psik resha delo nichale, even if the cause, the intended effect that's going to happen is something that you do not care about, you are still going to be liable for violating Shabbos. That's Tosfot's position. I really cut out, it's a huge Tosfot and appears in a few different places in Shas. It's really a long discussion where they go through every single case in Shas where psik resha comes up, try proving or disproving the Aruch's point. At the end of the day, Tosfot disagrees. The Aruch thinks psik resha lo nichale, it's going to be permitted. Tosfot and other Rishonim disagree. Tosfot himself ends up explaining how to explain this Gemara. The Tosfot ends up explaining the Ara Dechavrei, Perish David Melacha, Shem Srich Legufa. It's a different type of permission on Shabbos. It's basically something called Melacha, Shem Srich Legufa. It's a different category of things. I'm not going to go into it now. It's a little bit more complicated and involved for our purposes. Suffice it to say, for our purposes, what matters is you have the position of the Aruch that an unintended consequence that I was not thinking about, but it's going to happen 100% of the time, that I do not care about, is going to be permitted. According to Tosfot, it's going to be prohibited. So I'll give you a very, very real example where this comes up. Let's say, for instance, I have a picnic, you know, in Central Park on Shabbos, and I'm washing my hands. According to the Aruch, I can directly wash my hands onto the grass. Why? Because the purpose of, I'm not thinking about watering the grass. That's not what I'm thinking about. So Stavrosh Ein Mitkaven. Even though it's true, watering the grass is going to improve, you know, the grass, it's going to improve the garden overall in Central Park. Nonetheless, I'm not thinking about it. I could care less about it. It's not something that I care about. So for the Aruch, because the consequence of my action is something I could care less about, it's going to be permitted. According to Tosfot and other Rishonim, though, because even though I do not care about it, it's still going to happen 100% of the time, it is going to be prohibited. And so I would not be allowed to wash my hands over the grass on Shabbos. I would have to wash my hands somewhere else where I could be sure that the water is not going to fall onto the grass. That's pretty much the machloket between the Tosfot and the Aruch. Now here's the real nub of the issue. Who do we paskin like? Do we follow Tosfot or do we follow the Aruch? So take a look at source number 17. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the following case, and this case is important. We'll come back to it. Why? Actually, skip to source 18. It's very similar to source 9:17. Look at the Ramah. It's very similar to Tosfot. Same type of case, but it's just helpful for the next situation after this. Shulchan Aruch passes as follows: Hilchach Zevuvin Afbish Ein Benim Lo Nitzod Asur Let Sudan. Let's say, for instance, this is the case. If you have it prohibited in general, maybe only a rabbinic prohibition, but it's prohibited for me to catch flies on Shabbos. I cannot catch flies. Catching flies would be the prohibition of the malacha of tzad, of catching an animal. That's one of 39 malachot. And so let's say, for instance, I have a small box, right? Let's say I have a small little box, and I know that there are some flies inside the box right now. Can I cover the box, right? I'm not thinking about, let's say I want to cover the box, not because I want to cover the flies, but because I want to some other ulterior motive I have. But whatever it is, it's not clear. Depends on the case, I guess. But for some reason, I want to cover this box. But I'm not even thinking about the flies. I could care less about the flies being there. You know, I want to just cover the box for its own purposes. So the general rule is, this is the way that the Rama quotes, V'lachein yish li zaher, shelo lisgor teva ketana, therefore it's important, source number 18, that to not close a small box, or listom kilim shizuvim bo b'shabbat, or close any type of utensil in which there are flies located inside this utensil on Shabbos, d'avei p'sik reisha tzidu sham, because it will be a p'sik reisha, because the flies will be caught inside this box. This is a case where the Rishonim explained is a case of lo nichale. I don't care about keeping the flies. Nobody catches flies. I'm not intending to catch the flies. And yet, nonetheless, it's going to be prohibited. And clearly, as the Rishonim explained, Bisri Asrama and the Shulchan Aruch, similar in source number 17, that we see here that the Shulchan Aruch paskins against the Aruch, that indeed a p'sik reisha de lo nichale, if an unintended consequence is going to happen 100% of the time, even if I could care less about that consequence, I don't want the flies, I could care less about the flies, nonetheless, it's going to be prohibited. We paskin against the Aruch. This is the way that most Achron, that Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin, the Rama seems to paskin, and that's really the way that, 95% of Achronim seem to paskin. However, there is one exception, one notable exception, which is that Rav Chaim Brisk, the Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's grandfather, he understood the Rambam. I didn't quote the Rambam here because it's very involved, but he understood based on the Rambam that indeed the Rambam paskins like the Aruch, and therefore he personally paskins that p'sik reisha de lo nichale would be permitted. Why is this all relevant? Because our situation, the case of the hot water, I'm going to turn back to the diagram here, our case of the hot water, that case is a case of a p'sik reisha de lo nichale. Because yes, even if you think that the hot water comes automatic, the cold water, when you open the hot water faucet, that the cold water comes into the intake valve, into the hot water heater, into the hot water tank, it comes in right away, even if you describe that to be your maisa, your actual action, it's not defined as grumma. Nonetheless, the fact that the hot water the cold water entering the tank is being cooked by the hot water in the tank, that action is defined as a psik ratio. It's something that I'm not thinking about. No one's thinking about while opening the tap, oh, I remember that the cold water is entering. You know, I imagine even after hearing this here last week, no one was thinking about when they opened the tap about the cold water entering the tank. That wasn't something anyone thinks about. And yet, it happens every single time, 100% of the time. And so if you hold that, like the Aruch, that psik reisha de lo nichale, something which happens that you don't care about, that you have day of, that doesn't, you don't care about, is permitted. So then in this case, the cold water entering the tank and being heated up and cooked by the hot water in the tank, that is not something you care about, something you're thinking about, and therefore it's going to be permitted. And it's on that basis, I believe, I don't know for sure, but I know for sure that the Rav generally paskin like his grandfather, that a psik reisha de lo nichale, like the Aruch, is going to be permitted. And I believe that was the permission that was used by Rabbi Riskin and Rabbi Cohen here at Lincoln Square to permit certain people when they ask him about certain using hot water in certain apartments, buildings on the Upper West Side. I believe that's the rationale they used to permit the use of the hot water. In which case, I'm not entirely sure the details of what exactly their psak was, but in theory, that psak would not be limited to how many people are using the hot water at this given time. It wouldn't make a difference. As long as it's a psik reisha de lo nichale, as long as it's not something you're intending to happen, it would be permitted to use the hot water. The only situation that I can imagine that they would prohibit would be a situation where you use the hot water for a long enough time such that enough cold water has entered the tank such that now the flame or the heating element turns on. In such a case, it wouldn't be called a psik reisha de lo nichale anymore, because now you want hot water, so now it's something that nichale, you want the water to be hot. And so at that point, they would prohibit it. You wouldn't be allowed to take, a long shower or to use a lot of hot water, like a really, really long, to wash like 1,000 dishes. That would be prohibited, or just leave on the hot water. But to use a small amount of hot water to wash your dishes or the like, that would be permitted. Indeed, I've heard that the a prominent rabbi in Teaneck, Rabbi Yosef Adler from Rinat, who was himself a close student of the Rav. He poskens that way to his congregants in Teaneck, that you are allowed to use to wash your dishes on Shabbos using hot water. As long as you don't use an excessive amount of hot water, you should be fine. We're not concerned about as long as it's not enough that the fire or the heating element would turn on. Just to use a little bit of hot water would be promote secretion to lo nichale. It's only, it's not something that you intend to happen. It's not something that you want to happen if the water gets cooked, and therefore be permitted. Let me make the one important comment on this, which is that not only do you have to assume, according to this, that we poskim like the Aruch, which, as I said, most poskim do not think we poskim like the Aruch, but you also have to make a rather critical assumption about the fact that you don't care about the cold water being heated in the tank. Now, that's not very clear and obvious. Most people would argue that, yes, I'm not thinking about the cold water that enters into my hot water tank, but I obviously don't want the cold water to remain cold. I want it to become hot. I want it to become cooked. And so it's true that I'm not thinking about it, but most poskim would actually argue that it's not really a psikresha de lo nichale. It really is a psikresha de nichale, something I care about. I do want this cold water to be cooked. And so I think that's one of the reasons that many people feel that this explanation even if you agreed to the Rav's position of psikresha de lo nichale, they wouldn't be relevant in our case. That's one of the objections that people have to that argument. The response is that no, at the end of the day, I only care about the water at the top of the tank, the water I'm going to use right now. I don't really care about the water I would use, tomorrow. That's not the hot, I don't really care about that hot water. That's kind of the response, the back and forth. Do I care about it now? Care about it later? That's kind of the basic response. I think that there's a lot more sway to be said about the fact that it really is nichole. I think it's a rather hard argument to say the lo nichole. I don't care about this hot water. I think there's more to talk about. But that's kind of the basic objections, pro and con, that type of argumentation. Any comments or questions so far? No. Okay, great. So that's kind of claim number one. That's one way, and I believe, I don't know, I reached out to Rabbi Riskin. I haven't heard back from him yet. But I believe that probably, if I had to guess, his rationale to permit it. I know for a fact that that's Rabbi Adler and Teaneck, his rationale to permit it. And I believe many of the students of the Rav who would permit using hot water, it would be on this basis. That's statement number one. Let's move on to the third concept that I want to explore. And I explore it a little briefly because we are running a little bit out of time. And that's the concept of suffix secretia. And I mentioned this last week, and I want to explore this a little bit fuller. And what's a suffix secretia is the following. What if, right, in the case, let's go back to the case of the zvuvim, of the flies, right? Let's say, for instance, like the Dorma Paskin, that I can't cover a box that has flies in it because of the secretia. Even if I'm not intending to catch the flies, it would happen no matter what, right? Even if I don't want the flies to be caught. That was the Rama's case. The cause is the following question. What if, it's source number 20, what if I don't know if there are flies in the box, right? There might be flies. There's a decent chance there are flies, but I actually don't know if there are flies in the box. Right. What would the halacha say then? Can I now cover the box knowing that there might be flies in the box, but not knowing for sure? So the Taz's argument is that in such a case, if you think about it, it's a suffix. I'm not sure. I don't know if there. Yeah. Question.
Intentionally, if you know, then it's obviously
not.
Yeah.
Actually, it's exactly what the Taz argues. The Taz says, I don't know. Your Taz argues it's exactly like a regular Davar Sheni Mitkaven. I don't know if there are flies in there. That's exactly like something I don't know. And in terms of probability, right now it's not 100% chance that there are flies inside. There's 50% chance that flies are inside. And therefore it wouldn't be considered a psik ratio. It should be considered like any other suffix. And therefore any other suffix, it should be permitted. It should be totally fine. And so the Taz argues, yeah, it's fine. In that case, it's a suffix psik ratio. It should be fine. It should be like any other suffix and shouldn't be a problem. That's the Taz's argument. Rabbi Akiva Eger, though, in source number 21, he's talking about not specifically cooking. He's actually talking about a malacha of cooking and tarovet and cooking treif, non-kosher food. But the same type of argument where he argues, no, that's not true. In this case, you personally might have a suffix. You personally might have some doubt as to whether or not there are flies in the box. But if there are flies in the box, then 100% of the time, they're going to be caught. And therefore, for the Rabbi Kibager, this is like every other type of psik ratio. You can't consider this to be just a darshan mikaveh, just a case of I don't know the unintended consequences, and I look at the total percentage of occasions and the percentage chance of whether it happens or doesn't. In this case, if there are flies in the box, then indeed I will have violated Shabbos every single time. And so I cannot enter into this situation of doubt where 100% of the time I will have violated Shabbos. And so Rabbi Akiva Eger feels that even in the case of a suffix sigresha, it's going to be prohibited. How do we paskin? So most poskim believe that we paskin that this is the way that Beir Halachin, source number 22, this is Mishnah Berurah paskin, that when it comes to a melacha deoraita, a Torah level prohibition, we are going to be machmir like Rabbi Eger. If it's only a rabbinic level prohibition, then we're going to be makil like the Taz. In sum, then, if let's go back to our case, let's make this a little bit more real for our purposes. Let's say, for instance, that I make the following argument, and this is the argument that I think is a very strong argument to make. Let's say that the cold water, when it enters the tank, right, it enters the very bottom of the tank. Now, in theory, the hot water tank should have water at about, you know, 140 degrees Fahrenheit. That's what it's set for. But when it sets at 140 degrees Fahrenheit, that's usually for the top of the tank, or the middle of the tank. It's not really the bottom of the tank. And if some water has already come out, and the hot water heater is not turned on yet, then the water at the bottom of the tank might not yet be at, you know, 100 degrees. It might be, you know, below 100 degrees. And so when the cold water enters the tank, it's very likely, or there's definitely a certain possibility that the cold water that enters the tank will not, in fact, be heated up and cooked. And so I have in front of me what's called a suffix sigresha. If the water at the bottom of the tank is very hot, then the cold water, when it enters, will be cooked, will be heated, and I will have violated the prohibition of Shabbos, of cooking. If, though, the cold water on the bottom of the tank, if the water at the bottom of the tank, though, is not that hot, then I will not have violated. And so this is a classic case, what's called a suffix sigresha. I don't know the reality of what the facts on the ground are. If there are a certain way, 100%, I would have violated, 100%, and if not, I would have not violated. This is suffix sigresha. So how do we paskin in this case? So, because we are dealing with what I would describe as a melacha d'oraita, as a Torah-level prohibition, because cooking on Shabbos, cooking cold water in hot water, or heating up cold water such that it now is hot, is a prohibition of cooking on a Torah level. Therefore, in this case, I will potentially be violating a Torah-level prohibition. And as I said, the standard halacha follows in the suffix sigresha, follows as Mishnah Berurah Paskin, it seems to follow the Taz, Rabbi Akiva Eger, and therefore it would be prohibited. Even though it's only a suffix sigresha, it would still be prohibited. That would be the general argument about suffix sigresha. However, as I mentioned to begin with, there is another argument to be said. We talked about the Grumma case, right? The very first concept we first mentioned was this question of Grumma. When the cold water enters the tank, is that described as my action, or is it defined as a causative result of what I did? If it's only a causative result, if it's only considered to be grumma, so then you can add that this action is both grumma and it's a suffix sigresha. And on the basis of both grumma and suffix sigresha, that would be an argument to permit the use of the cold of hot water faucet, and you wouldn't be concerned about the cold water entering the tank. That would be the argument you would make. If you want to permit using hot water, not based on the Aruch, but on a different argument, this is the argument that Divrei David, a certain Achron, who wrote a very long kuntres about this topic, that's the explanation he gave for it, that would in theory permit the use of hot water on Shabbos. Yeah.
How do we know that both of these things together override a suffix about a deraisa?
Oh, how do we know? I could have run some sources. I didn't here. Yeah, I'm sorry.
There are sources.
Yeah, there are sources that suggest a suffix secretion.
It doesn't necessarily follow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There is, any other questions? No. Okay. There is one other argument people have made that it's actually quoted explicitly in the 39 Melachos book. It's the four-volume book by Rabbi David Ribiat. It's like the four-volume 39 Melachos book. I'm sure most people have seen it. It's like in gray. Either way, he has a book, and it's, for the most part, his sefer is actually pretty machmir, almost consistently across the board on most issues. But all of a sudden, when it comes to this issue, and source number 23, I quoted, he quotes that in extreme need, so he's already hedging, you see, there may be a basis, very much hedging, to permit use of hot water faucets in multifamily dwelling. why. He doesn't explain in the sources, but in source, he has footnote 264. And then in footnote 264, if you take a look, he explains the following. Because there is what he calls both a self-existing ratio and grumpa, right? Which is what I just argued now, that would be reason to permit the use of hot water on Shabbos. But when he explains, goes on to explain what the self-existing ratio is, his self-existing ratio is very strange. Here's what he argues self-existing ratio is. And I'm not going to read it inside, I'll read it. You can just read it along if you want. But his basic argument is the following. If you have someone in the building, let's say a non-Jew in the building, already has hot water turned off, then when you turn on the hot water, no additional cold water is entering the tank because the cold water is already entering due to the other individual. Let's say my friend, you know, Christopher, the non-Jew, is using the hot water. The cold water is already entering the tank. When I then use my hot water, no new cold water is entering the tank. That's the argument that he makes, and therefore he argues, every time I open the hot water faucet, it's a self-existing ratio. I don't know for sure, is cold water entering because of me, or is cold water already entering regardless of what I'm doing? That's his argument. And he says he spoke to some plumbers. That's the impression he got from the plumbers. Now, I'll admit, I am not a plumber. But of the research I did do, and of the physics that I do know, this is not true. It just can't be true. This is not possible. I gave you two reasons why it's not possible. Reason number one is because if there would be such a situation where not enough cold water entered the tank could explode. That's just the reality. If you don't put enough, if the hot water is very hot, it gets boiling hot, the tank could explode if there isn't enough water in the tank to cool it down. And so the reality is impossible that there isn't enough cold water entering the tank. As much cold water enters the tank as hot water leaves. That's just the basic reality. It has to be that way or the tanks would explode. Moreover, on a basic level of physics, his argument is based on the concept that the intake valve is only so big, it can only contain so much water, and therefore if there's so much hot water leaving, you know, the tank, because there are a lot of sinks, or, you know, a lot of residents in the building, so not as much cold water can enter as hot water leaves, which is also not true, because in matter of fact, the flow of water, flow of any liquid, is based not simply on the volume of the tank, of the intake valve, but it's also going to be based on the velocity of the given water. And so it may be true that the intake valve has a certain size, but the velocity of the water will increase. That's just the basic law of physics. It's based on pressure. Pressure is a function of both volume and velocity. And the reality of what he argues is just not true. And so if you have heard that argument, and I have heard it before, people even ask me about it, if you heard the argument to permit using hot water on Shabbos because other non-Jews in the building may be using the hot water at the same time, and therefore you're not sure if the cold water entering is your responsibility or someone else's responsibility, none of that can be true. It's not true in the basic engineering, basic physics of how that works, and it wouldn't make sense halachically. But what I did try to argue in this shir, and I'm happy to take any questions after this. Mincha's about to start in a few minutes. But as I tried to argue throughout these past two shiurim, in general, as I said, 90% of poskim think that it would be prohibited. I tried to argue that if you did want to permit use of hot water faucet on Shabbos, you could permit it on the first ground I mentioned last week, and I explored again this week, the addition of what's called grumma, as well as self-existing ratio. It's both the cause and effect of the cold water entering, as well as the very high likely chance that the cold water is actually not being heated by the cold water in the tank, because the bottom of the tank is actually not that hot. That'd be reason number one. And reason number two, the explanation that I assume that by Rifkin and by Cohen and others in Lincoln Square who've given permission to use hot water is based on the Rav's idea that we paskin like the Aruch, that a peak ratio de lo nichale is permitted. That if you believe that the cold water entering the tank that is cooked is lo nichale, it's not something that I want to happen, it's not something that I desire strongly, so in that situation, it'd be permitted. It's not something that I'm looking for. I'm not intending it. I'm not thinking about it. And therefore, it'd be permitted. That's the basic argument of the Rav. And for that reason, you'd be permitting that. I believe that's their argument. I haven't heard back from Ariskin, but I believe that's why they permitted. We're going to end very soon. If anybody has any one or two questions, and then we'll have to go for Mincha. All right. No questions. Great. Everyone's... Awesome. All right, great to see you next week. I promise new topic next week. Won't repeat the same one. Have a great day. Kaddish? Ask for say Kaddish or? Rechaim ben Akasha, Marcel Gershbach, Luzanko, Yisrael, Hafikach, Yerbala, and Tormi, Swartz, and Nanech, Abed, Simon, Figuris, Ravi, Adir.